Blog Talk Radio.
Hello from beautiful Missoula, Montana. This is Judy Helm Wright. Although a lot of people call me Auntie Artichoke, I am a wise woman with a global message of respect, resiliency, and responsibility. And today, our topic goes right in line with respect, responsibility, and resilience. And it is about therapy animals. We are working on the animal-human connection and what our pets can teach us. The speaker that I had hoped to have on today wasn't able to make it, but I am taking what I have to say from a magazine article written about the work that they're doing. Was so impressed with the magazine article that I called them to see if we could get them to come as a speaker, and they can't come now, but they're going to come at a later date, so I'll keep you apprised of that. What we're going to talk about is appreciating therapy animals. And every day in hospitals, in nursing homes, in schools, in libraries, assisted living homes, adult daycare programs, and lots of schools, I am constantly amazed how many middle schoolers walk by our house with a therapy dog. They cheer up the lonely, they help the those that are undergoing medical procedures, they pass the time, they generate friendly conversations, and they encourage patients to reach, stretch, walk, and move. Their presence of a therapy animal, specifically a therapy dog, because that's what most of us tend to think of, reduces stress levels and blood pressure. In schools and library, they even help children read. Now, as most of you know, or many of you know, or perhaps none of you know, I was trained as a parent educator. And one of my goals is to read, sing, and talk to your children, because that increases their vocabulary. And vocabulary is one of the few things that really is a road sign to how well they will do in school and in life. So in order to increase that vocabulary, kids need to read. They need to have been read to, but they also need to learn to read. Often in a school setting, when a child is trying to read and stumbles over words or is slow to sound them out, it makes them an object of ridicule. And reading's a skill. It's just like riding your bike or roller skating or playing the piano. You know the basics. You have to learn the basics. And then what makes you good at it is just practicing. What they've found is that children who practice in the schoolroom get so filled with anxiety that it stops their brain process. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. They just read slower and slower. However, what they have found is if those same kids, like your kids, my kids, our neighbor kids, have an animal that they can read aloud to, their reading skill goes up exponentially. It's something animals, by their very nature, are very forgiving, kind, loving, and they really, really offer unconditional love. So they're not going to giggle if you mispronounce a word. They're not going to snort or pass a note or bully you or tease you if you can't read very fast. What they are going to do is just listen. So a lot of schools, and some in our area, so I'm very pleased to hear that, have started a system of taking the kids to the Humane Society and animals there. One library that Mom was telling me about has service dogs in the library, mainly so that the kids will have an opportunity to read and to share, to tune up their reading skills, force them. So that's just some of the ways that a therapy animal that's like a general therapy animal. It doesn't belong to any one person or any one program. It's just there. It's just comfortable, it's kind, it's thoughtful, it's giving, and that's what kids need. Now, most kids also need an animal. They need their own. And I know this because a few years ago, I was writing a book, which I have just reissued with some newer and later information, and it's called Raise a Resilient Kid. And you'll find that on Amazon and also on artichokepress.com. But what we found was when I was interviewing these fifth and sixth graders, and I said, tell me what you do when you get disappointed. How do you handle it? How do you bounce back? What is it that you turn to that helps you to climb out of that sad space, that helps you to regain your positive outlook? And do you know what the number one answer was? This just blew me, and yet I shouldn't have been that surprised, having had six children, and our children brought other children home, so I've had an opportunity to observe kids. But the number one answer that kids told me that when they're disappointed, when they're down, when they're blue, when they're sad, or when they're frightened, when they're afraid, the number one thing they go to is animals. And if you don't have a physical animal, a live puppy, a goldfish, a parrot, then they would go to a stuffed animal or something that represented that warmth and that unconditional love to them. The interesting thing is the second thing on there was music, and then movies and being alone. But it is so amazing that they know that an animal gives them this acceptance, pure acceptance. An animal never has a red pencil in their hand. They are never bullying. They're always, always kind and accepting. Well, sometimes those therapy dogs or cats or salamanders literally can transform kids. We have a friend who has a lot of anxieties, and she has a very small dog that she carries on her lap, and it's a dog that when she walks in the room, you notice it. But very soon, you don't, because the dog just sits on her lap. She rubs the dog's back very gently. It calms her down, and the dog just lies there very quietly. No noise, no sudden movements, nothing. He just becomes actually a part of her. And many of the people that we know who use therapy dogs for anxiety tell me how effective they are, that they really, truly are effective. Now, we just heard from one of our interns who goes to Carroll College here in Montana. She was telling us about a program of study there that sounds wonderful. It would be really great if it were offered in a lot of colleges, but it's called anthrozoology as opposed to anthropology. It's anthrozoology. So it's a study of animals and how they became, how they were in the evolution, what they have learned and what they retain from the caveman days. But every year and every semester, at the end of semester, the students who are in this anthrozoology major bring therapy dogs to the Oval, which is like the meeting ground of the university. All of the students can come and just sit on the grass, which nature is by far and away one of the best stress relievers available. They sit on the grass and they play with the animals. They tickle the animals. They run. They throw sticks for them. They snuggle them. They cuddle them. And their blood pressure goes down. Their stress level goes down. Their brain becomes more activated. It has a chance to relax. And they do better in their tests. So I, when she was telling me that, I was super impressed with a way to use therapy dogs that are incidental. There's episodic, which is what our friend who has anxiety does, because it is, no, I've got that backwards. Episodic means that it's just an episode here or an episode there, which is what the therapy dogs in the oval were doing. Constant is what the anxiety dogs are, because they're not going to get better without the anxiety dogs. They're going to need them long term. So one of the things in studying this, and I'm anxious to have our expert come on and tell us in depth about it, is that there is a special connection between pets and autistic children. Another great medical breakthroughs are between stroke survivors and Alzheimer's patients. Alzheimer's patients who have lost the ability to speak, to remember current, seem to gain some brain connections when they're working with a pet, when they're stroking this little dog's back, when they're engaged in some sort of a very primal conversation with this pet. So even when it's nothing major or dramatic, it gives them that to relax, that ability to slow down and to really, really connect with this. So visiting pets, there are a lot of facilities where they will have a therapeutic animal on staff. So that therapeutic animal maybe would go get someone's slippers, or they would be in tune enough with the residents of the facility that they could tell when someone was going to have a medical episode and they could get help. A dog might stand while a patient's brushing him doing physical therapy. That certainly is much more interesting, doing physical therapy by brushing the dog, than it is to do it with one of those stretch bands over and over and over. And someone who is having speech therapy, they can exercise their voice by giving commands to the dog and working with them to make sure that their communication is clear, that the dog can understand them. Anyone who loves animals is likely to work much harder and feel much more motivated when the animal is part of the therapy team. Most of the special animals are dogs and cats. Some are birds, quite a few rabbits, miniature horses. We have heard of many miniature horses which come to Special Olympics or come to developmentally group homes. They may have a little miniature horse as their mascot, as their love machine, the one thing that they all love to play with, that they care for, that they take turns with. The reason that these particular animals are chosen so often is because they are very calm, they travel well, they recover quickly from distractions, and they enjoy being petted by strangers. They're affectionate, they're kind. Like most animals, what they offer is pure, unconditional love. Now, there is some confusion about different categories of animals, so it's important to understand there's a difference between therapy animals, emotional support animals, and service animals. So therapy animals are like our friend who has anxiety. Therapy animals are owned by a trainer, and they just go visit different hospitals or different assisted living facilities. But the handler is the one who who takes care of them and who has responsibility for them. Therapy dogs are not service dogs. They don't. They can't go into restaurants. They can't go places that a service dog could go. Now, emotional support dogs, that's what our friend has who has the anxiety. They calm her down. But once again, she brings her dog to meetings, to church, but would not be able to bring her dog in a restaurant, would not be able to bring her dog in places that a service dog would be allowed to go. Service dogs are specifically trained to perform tasks for a disabled person, someone who's blind, hearing impaired, autistic, epileptic, or physically disabled. They have the legal right to go anywhere with their owner. And legitimate service animals come from organizations like Guiding Eyes for the Blind, Canine Companions for Independence. Lots of service dogs are going now to veterans who have come back with PTSD. And the service dog has not only the ability to calm them down, but the ability to sense when they're in trouble, to know, ooh, he's getting ready to have a seizure, his blood sugar is getting low, he needs to have these things. And these animals are specifically trained for the person they're with. So, for instance, we have a cousin who has a therapy dog that she takes into pediatric hospitals. That dog listens to her commands. The dog allows other people to pet her and be kind to her and do all of these things, but she's Laura's dog. And the dog doesn't forget that, and Laura doesn't forget that. But when we're talking about service dogs, Laura may train a dog, but once that dog goes to a veteran or goes to someone who's blind, then that relationship with Laura is severed. It now becomes the relationship of the person who uses that service dog. So it's dogs can only have one master. And as we're working on this new books that are coming up, and you're going to love these, called The Human-Animal Connection, it's so interesting to hear reports from people saying, yes, we went to the Humane Society to find a dog, and all of the other dogs were doing this, that, and the other, and this dog way in the back came right out and licked my hand. It's like he chose me. And that actually, that's pretty much what happens. Our dogs do choose us. And so when they're doing a service dog, they have to be absolutely sure that those two connect, that they resonate with one another, and that they will work in tandem. So we, in the New Yorker magazine, there was a woman, her name was Patricia Marks, and she said, in contrast to an emotional support animal, and those that you'll many oftentimes will see in magazines or newspapers, they will be called ESA animals. A service dog is trained to perform very specific tasks, such as pulling a wheelchair, responding to seizures. The IRS classifies these dogs as deductible medical expenses. Whereas an ESA, the emotional support animal, is more like a blanket. It's more like a self-soothing teddy bear. It's more like utilizing this animal, making this connection with this animal, calms the person down. But it isn't a medical necessity. So service animals and emotional support animals have in common that their focus is on their human partners. And again, a few minutes ago I told you about the cousin Laura who has a therapy dog that goes into assisted living. That dog answers to Laura. Laura can say, can you give Mrs. Jones, can Mrs. Jones pet you? Can you bring Mr. Jones' slippers? But the dog knows that that Laura is the one giving the orders and giving the reward when the job is done correctly. Most registered therapy animals, and that's what Laura has, work in hospitals, nursing homes, assisted living. It has been shown that these animals can reduce pain, it reduces anxiety, it can almost alleviate depression and fatigue in people who have a whole range of health problems. And it's interesting because one of the situations that's brought out here that I really like is the use in dental offices. And many dental offices who work specifically with children, and that's a very, very narrow position because not all dentists want to work with children, and certainly not all children want dentists to work with them. But if there's a dog there, if there's a dog in the waiting room, or there's some interaction that the kids can have with that dog, it cuts down that anxiety. It reduces the pain, and it helps them to, it helps the children to have something else to focus on as opposed to just the pain or what they perceive the dentist is going to be doing. And it isn't just the patients who benefit. When people bring their kids to the dentist where there is an animal, they feel better. Studies have shown that they rate the dentist higher, that they rate him much more competent. Those are things that just come from having the animal in that same room. Well, we were thinking about the opportunity of maybe fathering or fostering a pet therapy volunteer. However, one of the things that we did was we cut our gate down in our fence yard because we have a very, very loving and kind Icelandic shepherd named Rosie. And when the gate is cut down, the kids coming home from the middle school can reach over the gate and they play with Rosie. And again, my experience as a parent educator, that there's this connection between kids and animals that aren't there between kids and adults. So oftentimes I see kids reaching over the gate to play with Rosie for 10, 15 minutes. I know they're not just scratching her neck. I know they're talking to her about maybe they were bullied today. Maybe music was extra hard. Maybe they didn't do well in their chemistry test. But Rosie loves them anyway. She is just there to say, it's okay. I love you. I'm grateful. I'm grateful that you're here to scratch my ears, and I'll lick your hand to show you how happy I am. If you decide that this might be something that you would like to do, if you resonate with animals, and if you're good with them and have patience and time, this is not an easy thing to immediately just say, oh, yeah, I can do that. I can train a therapy dog. It isn't easy. It isn't easy, and it's also painful when you have to give that dog away because you build such a strong relationship with that dog, and you train them, and then that service dog goes to someone else. What you get in return is this feeling of absolute, total acceptance and knowing that what you're doing has aided and helped a fellow human being. It has, you're doing a job that not everyone can do, and you're making a difference to one person, but that one person has a family. Maybe they have a workplace. Maybe they have, they're going to school. So the sacrifice that you would do in becoming a therapy foster parent to a therapy dog or cat is immeasurable. And I would certainly like to encourage that. I would like to ask you to really ponder, is this something that I could do? This is something that perhaps I can't help at the food bank, or I can't do this, but I could foster an animal for someone, maybe even a child that has epilepsy. So I would hope that if that were something that you were interested in, you look online, because everyone has different things. In Montana, it's called Intermountain Therapy Animals, and it's it involves a pre-screen interview and then an all-day training workshop for people without the pets. They never even see the pets. And then they start working half-hour evaluations that test the pet handler teams and for skills and aptitude, and there's an application procedure, and it's the vet gets involved because he or she does a very thorough examination of the pet to make sure that he or she is ready to go into the next step of their calling. And it's a pretty neat thing. So if this is something that resonates with you, Google therapy animals. Google volunteer positions at the Humane Society. I'm just sure that they will be able to tell you who to connect and how to do this. It's very worthwhile. So we're almost at the end of our show. And once again, I want to remind you about going to our website, which is www.deathofmypet. I am a pet grief coach, and I work with families just like yours and mine who have lost their best friend. And these pet parents are grieving and they're mourning the loss of these furry friends. So I would hope that you would go there, sign up to be part of our community of kind, thoughtful people who have respect for all. And in return for doing that, you get a great book called Pet Jokes, Riddles, and One-Liners that will just really touch your heart if you're a pet lover. And then you can sign up. There are things I do, individual coaching. I also help people write books about their pets, tell the story, the backstory of how they got the pet, how they worked with the pet, what it meant to them to have this pet in their life. I think that if you are the kind of person who is drawn to this, which obviously you are, or you wouldn't be listening, then it behooves you to find out what your next step is. That what is the coincidence of you being here? What is the serendipitous event that brought you here today? Maybe you are supposed to foster a service dog. Maybe that's the next calling. Maybe that's where your talents lie. Irregardless, I'm grateful that you're here. I'm thankful that you will read our blog at www.deathofmypet.com and that you will share your stories with us. Send us your stories. Put in your subject line real big capital letter story or pet story so they don't get lost in there. And then let me read. We'll use some of these in our blog. We'll use some of them in books. We'll use some of them posted in various Facebook support groups, but we'll let you know where your submission is. We won't just forget it. We're grateful that you're part of this community. We're grateful that you want respect for not only two-legged people, but four-legged people. You are doing an important work, and the work that you're doing is working with other people to show respect and to show kindness and to do the things for our animals to repay them for the many, many blessings that they have given us. So this is Judy Helm Wright, a pet grief coach and book mentor and book author who wants to work with you. Come and see us again at www.deathofmypet.com, deathofmypet.com. We'll be looking forward to connecting with you on many, many different levels. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye.